The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, Volume 5, featuring these two episodes. Episode 1, The Adventure in Lander's Field. Episode 2, The Case of the Peridol Chamber. The radio programs featured in this audiobook were written by Edith Meiser, based upon the characters and suggested by incidents appearing in stories created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in his Sherlock Holmes detective novels, featuring narration by Basil Rathbone as Sherlock and Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson. The radio show's host is Charles Knox Manning.
From the stage of the Paramount Theater in Hollywood, Pet-Free Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Pet-Free family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us about another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And now for our weekly doctor's appointment. Let's knock on his library door and see if...
There's no point in doing that, Mr. Thatcher. I'm right behind you.
Oh, hello, Dr. Watson. Don't tell me you've been stalking me.
No, my boy. I was on the patio and I heard your footsteps, so I thought that I'd come in and fetch you. Let's go back and sit out there, shall we? It's a beautiful evening.
That's fine with me, Doctor.
Here we are. Now, settle yourself down in a chair and light a cigarette, if you have one. And I'll get on with my story.
Well, last week, you told us it concerned an adventure that you and Sherlock Holmes had in Flanders during the First World War.
That's right, Mr. Thatcher, did.
I thought that you and the great man had retired at that period.
We had, my boy, but it was only natural that as soon as the war broke out, we both offered our services in any capacity that might help our country.
Of course. And how did tonight's story begin, Doctor?
It was in the winter of that first year. Things weren't going very well for the Allies. The Germans were advancing on Paris, and the picture was looking very black. It was just 24 hours before the famous Battle of the Marne began, the battle that changed the early course of the war, when Holmes told me that we had to go up to the front lines on a secret mission. We'd been in Paris for several weeks, where Holmes had just solved the case of the missing aide-de-camp. I was anxious to get back to England and my work in the war hospitals, but of course this new summons was in the nature of a command. And so, late on a rainy September afternoon, Holmes and I, with the boom of gunfire in our ears, found ourselves in the front seat of a staff car, sloshing and jolting its way towards the battlefield.
Am I driving too fast for you, gentlemen?
No, Sergeant, not at all.
No, no, you're doing a splendid job. Oh, my man, look out, considering the state of the road.
Thank you, sir.
Hello? The gunfire's getting nearer, Holmes.
Yes, old fellow. I imagine we haven't much further to go, have we, Sergeant?
No, sir, we're nearly there.
Did you notice the two civilians in the back seat, Holmes?
Yes. Handsome woman and a distinguished-looking man, several years her senior.
I wonder who they are.
I'll tell you. He's a Shakespearean actor of some note. Oh. Though he never achieved the fame to which he thinks he's entitled. I shouldn't be at all surprised if he feels that he's been slighted in not receiving a knighthood.
Well, Holmes, that's amazing. How can you possibly deduce all that from just looking at the man as we got into the car?
Elementary, my dear fellow. I didn't deduce it. We saw him twice last year in the London Theatre, if you remember.
What?
His name is Maitland Morris. As for his biography, he's a friend of my brother, Mycroft's. He told me about him.
Well, what do you suppose he's doing up here near the front line?
His brother is General Sir Stanley Morris, who's in command of this particular front, and it would seem reasonable to presume that his brother has come up here to give a performance for the front-line troops. I suppose this hut is as far as we can drive, Sergeant.
I'm afraid so, sir. We're 4 miles from the front line now. You'll have to clear your papers here. See that ruined farmhouse there, sir?
Yes, Sergeant. Is that the General's headquarters?
Yes, sir.
Come on, Watson.
Good Lord, it's pelting with rain.
Yeah, let's make a dash for it. Friend?
Give the password.
St. Crispin.
Pass, friends, and show your papers.
How did you know the password, Holmes?
I was given it before we left Paris, old chap.
Oh, Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, isn't it?
Yes, Captain.
I'm Captain Maxwell, General Morris's aide-de-camp. He asked me to escort you up to his headquarters. By the way, weren't Maitland Morris and his wife in the car with you?
Yes, they're just behind us.
Oh, splendid. I'm afraid I'll have to ask to see your papers.
Yes, of course. Here's my permit, Captain Maxwell.
Thank you. I know you both, of course, but we can't afford to take any chances when they're this close to the enemy lines. Let's see. Oh, yes, that's fine, Doctor. Everything's in order.
All right,
yours, please, Mr. Holmes.
Here you are.
Thanks.
Oh, who goes there?
Friend.
Where's the rescue party now?
Oh, good.
Christopher.
This is quite in order, Mr. Holmes.
Show your papers.
Oh, there you are, Captain Maxwell.
Oh, hello, sir. Hello, Mrs. Morris.
How are you, Captain Maxwell?
Well, you both met Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, I suppose?
Well, no, we haven't, even though we drove up in the same car. Natural reserve of us Britishers, I suppose. How are you, Mr. Holmes?
How do you do, sir?
I know your brother Mycroft very well. How are you, Doctor?
I'm glad to meet you, Mr. Morris. I saw you a couple of times in the theatre last year and enjoyed your performances very much.
Well, thank you, sir. Well, then you must know my wife, my leading lady.
How do you do, gentlemen?
How do you do, Mr. Morris?
Can I see your papers, Mr. Morris? Just a matter of form. You understand.
Oh, yes, of course, of course.
Mrs. Morris, I presume you and your husband are going to give a performance tonight for the men going up the front line.
Yes, Doctor. We're very flattered. They've asked us to do some Shakespearean scenes.
Oh, yes.
Although I should have thought something a little lighter would have been more appropriate. The General, he's Maitland's brother, you know, seemed to think differently.
Well, my dear, show Captain Maxwell your papers. Then we can all go along and see my brother Stanley.
Very well, Maitland.
Mr. Morris, I shall look forward to hearing your reading of Shakespeare's St. Crispin's speech from Henry V tonight.
Bless my soul, Holmes. How did you know I was planning to do it?
Well, the setting is so perfect and the time so appropriate, I can't conceive an English actor who could resist the temptation.
Oh.
I noticed that your brother appreciated the fact in naming today's password.
Yes, it's amazingly appropriate. You know, it's almost 500 years ago to the day that the Battle of Agincourt took place.
Well, let's hope that the results of the forthcoming battle will be equally successful for England.
Yes, indeed. Oh, by the way, Holmes, this will probably seem rather silly to you, but I'm an inveterate autograph collector, and I have my book here with me. I wonder if you'd mind signing
it. I'll be very glad to, Mr. Morris. Give me a pen, will you, Watson?
Here we are, Holmes.
You'll find yourself among quite distinguished company in that book, sir.
So I see. Adelina Patti, Crown Prince of Norway. Oh, no. Field Marshal von Tauchnitz.
Oh, yes. He was one of my admirers when I played in Munich before the war. I suppose now that our countries are fighting, I should tear that page out. Do you know, I cannot help but feel that art and the appreciation of art are independent of national hatred.
Quite so, sir. I myself still have a medal presented to me by the University of Leipzig for some trifling services. There you are, Mr. Morris.
Oh, thank you very much, Mr. Holmes. A notable addition to my collection.
I shall be very glad to sign your book for you, Mr. Morris, if you'd like me to.
That's very kind of you, Doctor. Oh, Captain Maxwell,
if our
permits are all in order, don't you think we should be moving along?
Just what I was going to suggest myself. I'll take you all straight to General Morris's headquarters. General Morris, may I introduce Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson?
How do you do, sir?
How are you, General?
How do you do? Know a lot about you. Long way from Baker Street, isn't it?
Yes, indeed, sir.
Where's that brother of mine? Ah, there you are, Maitland. Cynthia, how nice to see you both.
Oh, it's good to see you again, Stanley.
Hello there, Stanley.
The men will be glad you arrived. They're looking forward to your show tonight.
We're very flattered that they want to hear us do some Shakespeare.
Oh, rubbish, old boy. With you and Cynthia up there on the platform, you could read the telephone book and they'd love you.
Oh, very kind.
By the way, you'll find the stage very primitive. Just a few trestles and a large tent and a curtain made of army blankets. And your dressing room will be even worse.
Oh, don't worry about our comfort, Stanley. As long as we cheer the boys up, that's the important thing.
Yes, of course. By the way, what program do you have mapped out for us?
Well, I thought we'd have two shows. The tent's not large enough to hold everybody at once. We have to keep up an alert all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Think you can manage two separate shows?
Oh, of course I can, Stanley. I may look old, but I don't feel it.
You don't even look it, you scoundrel.
Thank you. Perhaps we could take a look at the stage and equipment, eh?
Oh, certainly. Captain Maxwell, take them over to the tent and show them what the facilities are, will you?
Right, sir. Will you follow me?
Oh, yes, of course. See you later, Stanley. Come along, my dear.
All right.
I'm glad you're here, Holmes. I'm sure I can speak quite freely in front of Dr. Watson.
Oh, yes, with perfect freedom, sir. He's my colleague. He's an old army man himself.
Really? What regiment, Duffer?
5th Northumberland Fusiliers, sir. Later attached to the Berkshires in Afghanistan and wounded in the Battle of Maynooth.
Really? Oh, then I'm sure I can speak freely and Holmes, you know why you're up here so near the front line, don't you?
I have a very shrewd suspicion, sir.
Yeah, I thought you had. That's why I asked for you to be sent here.
You asked for me to be sent here, General? Yes, I think I understand.
Well, I wish I did.
You will, Doctor, in due time. In the meanwhile, gentlemen, I'll have an orderly show you to your quarters.
Thank you, sir.
And, Holmes, take a look around, will you, and keep your ears open. We're comparatively a little distance from the German front lines, and yet there's a very puzzling silence just now.
Yes, I noticed that, sir. And half an hour ago, on our way up, there was quite a lot of shilling.
Exactly. It's unnatural and rather frightening at a time like this. You see, we're attacking at dawn. The enemy might be trying to infiltrate spies, and the whole success of this battle depends on a surprise attack.
I quite understand, sir. Come on, Watson.
The first performance starts in a few minutes, you know. They're all there waiting. Why are we tramping about out here in the mud, in the rain?
I thought a pipe or two in the open air would clear our brains.
Yes, a pipe in the open air is one thing, but a pipe in a downpour of rain is another.
Is it raining? No, didn't even notice it. I was listening to the silence.
What do you mean?
Thousands upon thousands of Germans. Armed Germans. Full of a blind, fanatical hatred and desire to kill, are crouched in trenches only a mile or two from here. Surrounding us are an equal number of English boys, also armed, and with the will, if not the desire, to fight, because they know their cause is the cause of freedom and justice. All these thousands poised, ready to pounce on each other and fight to the death, and yet, beyond that patter of rain, there isn't a sound to break the stillness of a September evening. Strange world we live in, old chap.
You're being unusually rhetorical, Holmes.
Yes, I am, aren't I? Let's be a little more practical, shall we? I wonder what is wrong with the actors tonight.
Why do you ask that?
Well, a little while ago, I noticed Mrs. Morris in a great state of excitement, going towards the farmhouse where the general is. Then she went back to her own quarters, and now she seems to be headed in our direction. Anything wrong, Mrs. Morris?
It's Maitland.
What's wrong with her, madam?
She's disappeared.
Disappeared? What's happened?
We were in the tent together, making up for our performance, when an orderly came in with a message. Maitland said it was from his brother. Slipped on a raincoat and went out, saying he'd be back in a few moments. I waited and waited, and after a while I got worried and I went over to see the general myself. He said that he'd sent no message, and that he hadn't seen any sign of Maitland.
Good Lord, what can have happened to him?
I don't know, Doctor, but I'm frightened. What shall I do, Mr. Holmes?
You're a brave woman, Mrs. Morris.
Brave? I don't know, Mr. Holmes. Why?
Because the show must go on. I shall take your husband's place.
But Holmes, something's happened to Maitland Morris. He's in danger.
True, Watson, true. Huh? But 1,000 men inside that tent are in mortal danger, too. Tomorrow morning, many of them may be corpses on the fields of Flanders. But tonight, they've been promised a show.
You think that you can do it, Holmes?
Oh, I think I can, with the help of Mrs. Morris.
I can't do it, Mr. Holmes.
You can, Mrs. Morris, and you will. If only to uphold that great tradition of the theater, that the show must go on.
We now return to Act Two of Timely Audio's presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
And now, back to tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure. It is just before the Battle of the Marne and the First World War, and Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson are at headquarters a few miles behind the frontline trenches. A famous Shakespearean actor who was to give a performance for the troops has mysteriously disappeared, and the great detective has taken his place at the last minute. As we rejoin our story, Sherlock Holmes, alone on the improvised stage, is delivering a Shakespearean speech before a spellbound audience.
This happy breed of men, this little world, this precious stone set in a silver sea, which serves it in the office of a wall or as a moat defensive to a house against the envy of less happier lands, this blessed plot, this earth, this realm, this England.
That shot, are you all right?
Yes, old chap. Fortunately, I started to leave the stage as the shot was fired. The bullet just missed me. I heard it splinter some wood nearby.
But who on earth would want to shoot you?
That's what we've got to find out, though I think it more likely that the shot was intended for me. It was not intended for me, but for Maitland Morris, the man for whom I'm substituting.
Well, even so, who'd want to shoot him?
Oh, don't ask me so many questions, old fellow. Let's see what clues we can find. Now, the shot was fired from outside the tent from behind me. Yes, look there. See the hole in the tent there?
By Jove, yes. The footlights would outline your shadow on the back of the tent. Whoever it must have fired at your silhouette.
The question is, where did the bullet embed itself? Aha! Look here, Watson. You got a penknife?
Yeah, wait a minute. Here, Holmes.
This shouldn't be hard to extract. Look at this splintered tent pole. Wait a minute. There we are. Excellent. Very interesting.
Well, what's so interesting about it? Just a revolver bullet, isn't it?
Oh, no, it isn't, Watson.
Huh?
It's far from just a revolver bullet. This bullet was fired from a German Luger pistol.
A German pistol? There must have been a spy here behind our lines.
That's a reasonable enough assumption. Yes, we may be sure that no English soldier would carry such a weapon and face inspection. Come on, I want to talk to Mrs. Morris. Mrs. Morris, I want you to be very frank with me.
But of course, Mr. Holmes.
You know why your husband's missing, don't you?
No, I don't. Have you found out anything?
Come, madam. Why keep up this pretense any longer? I know that your husband is a spy, or at least a great sympathizer with the German cause.
The general's brother a spy? Good Lord.
How dare you say that?
Because it's true. Foreign Office have been suspicious of his sympathies for some time. His own brother knew it. That's why he asked to have me sent up here to keep an eye on him during his visit.
It is true. Why should I keep up the pretense any longer? You see, Maitland was a disciple of Stuart Houston Chamberlain.
Oh, who was this Stuart Houston Chamberlain?
An Englishman who married one of Richard Wagner's daughters and became a German citizen and an archenemy of England.
I tried to dissuade Maitland. I implored him to consider his British heritage, his brother's name and mine. But Maitland was a strange man. His life was one of frustration and envy.
Envy of his brother, I suppose?
Yes. When Stanley was knighted, it hurt Maitland terribly. He said it was typical if the English would knight a soldier and yet leave a great artist like himself unrecognized. That in Berlin, they really understood and rewarded the artist.
Well, if the authorities knew that, it's amazing they allowed him to come so close to the front lines at a time like this.
Oh, it was at the general's request. He wanted to plead with my husband to warn him that his secret was known. And now Maitland's gone over to the German line. Oh, it's terrible.
It's worse than that. It's disastrous. He can give them information. This is the strength of our troops here. He knows the password. He might even know the hour the attack is primed to start.
How did your husband expect to enter the German lines in safety, Mrs. Morris?
He speaks fluent German, Mr. Holmes. I fancy the autograph book he was carrying containing the signature of Field Marshal von Topnitz was in reality his pass through the German lines.
You've told the general that his brother was gone, of course.
I haven't been able to. He moved up to the front line position immediately after the first performance, though I had warned him what I thought Maitland was planning to do. I think he intended to give his performance first, then cross the lines immediately afterwards. But something must have made him change his mind. Perhaps he suspected I'd warned the general. Anyhow, as you know, when I got back to our quarters, he'd gone.
Did he leave any note, madam?
Yes, he did. Here it is.
Thank you. I have gone, my dear. Try and understand and forgive if you can. You wouldn't come with me, and so I'm taking what is left of my heart and my hopes where they belong, among the friends that understand and appreciate me. It is something stronger than love and blood and country that makes me do this. It is something dearer to me than life itself. Dearer to me than life itself.
Oh, how could he? How could he? The shame of this will kill poor Stanley. Mr. Holmes, will you break the news to him? I know it's cowardly of me, but I just can't tell him myself.
Don't worry, Mrs. Morris. I'll tell him. Dr. Watson and I will ask Captain Maxwell to escort us to the General's frontline headquarters. In the meantime, try and keep calm. We'll tell him.
If you will wait in the dugout, Mr. Holmes, I'll tell the general that you're here.
Thank you, and be sure to let him know the urgency of the matter.
Yes, sir.
Holmes, this is a dreadful business.
Yes, it is, Watson. Though if my plans work out correctly, I think the success of tomorrow's battle may not be imperiled.
What plan?
Shh. Listen.
You know, Holmes, a strange silence from the German lines since we came here might be accounted for by the fact that they knew Maitland was making his getaway. They wouldn't want to risk wounding such a valuable spy.
Quite possibly.
What I still don't understand is who shot at you with a German pistol and why.
You're being very dense, old fellow. Surely it's obvious that... Here comes General Morris now.
Poor devil. This is going to be a dreadful shock to him.
Hello, Holmes. Dr. Watson?
General Morris, I'm afraid that I've bad news for you. Your brother has gone over to the German lines.
Maitland did go there. I should have put him under an armed guard as soon as he came here, but I thought I could reason with him, appeal to his sense of honor.
Instead of which you tried to shoot him, sir, but fortunately for me, you missed. You see, I took his place at the first performance.
But that shot was fired from a German pistol.
True. That was when I first knew the general had fired the shot.
But I still don't see how you could now.
Only a high-ranking officer, not subject to inspection, could carry a non-regulation firearm. You're an old army man, you should know that. In any case, you'll observe that the general carries a Luger at his waist.
Great heavens, Holmes, I thought I was firing at Maitland. I had no idea that it was you.
You intended to kill your own brother, sir?
Yes.
And I'm sorry I failed. I'd rather see my brother dead than alive and a traitor to his country. But now he's safely in the German lines. Heaven knows what secrets he may be imparting. One thing we can be certain, our chance of a surprise attack in the morning is gone.
Possibly not, sir.
Oh, what do you mean?
You see, I took the liberty of altering your brother's credentials quite extensively.
How, Holmes?
I knew of his German sympathies. Mycroft had given me a great deal of information about him, and so I took it on myself to decide that it was unsafe to allow him so near the enemy lines with his own identification on him.
Well, what did you do, Holmes?
I took the liberty, sir, of stealing his autograph book, the one containing the magical signature of Field Marshal von Tauchnitz. I have it in my pocket now. I think we shall find within its pages a code concealed in the various autographs, giving valuable information to the enemy.
Good Lord.
I also switched military permits on him. I felt that in the event that he did go over to the German lines, his welcome might be less cordial if they were under the impression that they'd captured Sherlock Holmes. To make that identification doubly sure, I also slipped in his pocket a slight souvenir of my own.
By Joe Holmes, you mean that medal that was presented to you by the University of Leipzig?
Exactly, old fellow. I no longer wish to own a decoration given me by a country of barbarians, and it seemed a rather neat and effective way of returning it to them.
So the Germans will think they've captured Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, sir, and unless I'm much mistaken, he'll receive very short shrift at their hands.
Yes, they hate you.
There's your answer, sir. I'm sorry.
Well, don't be sorry, Holmes. It's better that way. Now his secret can die with him.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes, Maxwell, what is it?
Would it be in order for me to return to headquarters now, sir? It's very nearly time for the second performance, and I've still been unable to trace the whereabouts of your brother.
Well, my brother will not be acting tonight, I'm afraid. Holmes, I wonder if I might ask you to take his place once again.
If you want me to, General.
I do. Maitland had planned to do the St. Crispin speech from Henry V. He knew how much I loved him.
I realize that, sir. When I was told the password up here...
Well, can you remember the speech, Holmes?
Oh, I think so. At any rate, I can try.
Then do it for me, my dear fellow, will you? For me.
I'll be very proud to do it, General. Goodbye and good luck.
Thank you, Holmes. Captain Maxwell, take them back to headquarters, will you? The men will be waiting for the performance.
Christians shall ne'er go by from this day to the ending of the world, but we in it shall be remembered. We few, we happy few, we band of brothers. For he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother. Be he ne'er so vile, this day shall gentle his condition. And gentlemen in England now abed shall think themselves accursed they were not here, and hold their manhoods cheap, while any speaks that fought with us upon St. Crispin's Day.
Well, Doctor, that was a bit of an exciting adventure.
I can still remember that awful feeling I had when I heard the shot in the tent and realized someone had tried to kill Holmes.
He did have a narrow escape, didn't he?
Well, Holmes always said there was no such thing as a narrow escape. He said you either escaped or you didn't. If you did, well, why worry? And if you didn't, you couldn't worry, so what?
Quite a philosophy. I'd like to discuss it with you further.
Over a bottle of wine?
How else?
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and is based on an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Adventures of the Blanched Soldier. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petrie Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. This is Jack Slattery saying good night for the Petrie family. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Petrie Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petrie family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell about another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And now for our weekly visit with the good Dr. Watson. Let's see if he's expecting us.
Come in, come in, come in.
Ah, good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Campbell. It's about time you got here. Drop a chair and make yourself comfortable.
Oh, thanks. Well, you have the old black dispatch box out again, I see. I suppose you've been going over your notes on tonight's adventure.
That's right, my boy. And this may interest you. Mrs. Watson figured prominently in the story.
She did?
Yes, in fact, if it hadn't been for some remarkably quick thinking on her part, Holmes and I might have... well, there I go again, telling you the end of the story before I've begun it.
Well, how did it begin, Doctor?
On a winter evening in 1887. I'd been married some months, and in consequence, I hadn't seen much of my old friend Sherlock Holmes.
Well, you're still living at Baker Street, I suppose.
Yes, my boy, but we couldn't persuade him to come around and see us. From time to time, I'd heard some vague accounts of his doings, of his summons to Odessa in the case of the Trepoff murder, and of his clearing up the singular tragedy of the Atkinson brothers. But to get back to tonight's story, my wife and I had just finished an excellent dinner. I remember we'd settled ourselves down for an evening of pleasant domesticity. She was stitching away on a piece of expert petit point, and I was at my desk balancing figures in the family account book. After a few moments, my wife looked up to me and...
John, dear, don't look so troubled.
Oh, was I looking troubled?
Well, you've been scowling at that account book for 10 minutes now. What's the matter, dear? Don't the figures add up correctly?
Oh, yes, they add up correctly. In fact, they tell a very pretty story. After buying my practice and setting up all my outstanding accounts, I find that we have nearly £150 left of the dowry that Mr. Sholto settled upon you.
160, isn't it, dear? I was doing the same sum this morning.
Oh, well, but still 160. In any case, Mary, dear, the point I was going to make is that we don't need the money just now. My practice is picking up splendidly, and I was thinking that we might invest it in something really sound, of course.
Who's been talking to you, John? Dr. Wilson again.
Well, as it happens, I did bump into him at the hospital today. He can put us onto something very good in Peruvian silver. What do you think of the idea?
Well, John, the fact is, I'd almost decided to make a business investment with it myself. I thought I'd surprise you.
Well,
now let me tell you about it, John.
Oh.
Yesterday, when you were out on your rounds,
yes,
a most charming man called here.
Okay.
And it's Ted Barber. He introduced himself as a friend of Mrs. Cecil Forrester's.
Well.
He said he was certain we'd be interested in his new company. And he talked so convincingly that, well, I'm afraid I almost promised him I'd buy some stock in the company.
Oh, really? What sort of company is it?
Well, I didn't quite understand that part of it. But it sounded wonderful. He left a prospectus. It's in the right-hand drawer of the desk. It's something to do with a wonderful new metal that's been discovered by an American chemist called Paradil or Parades or something.
Oh, let's have a look and see what it says. A company formed to exploit the amazing new metal discovered by Dr. Parades. Paradil preferred stock. The potentialities of this new alloy are measurable. The fourth dimension has been conquered. What? Vital dislocation is an accomplished fact. Oh, gracious me, my dear child. This prospectus is absolute poppycock.
Now, John, you mustn't be stubborn.
Oh,
I think at least we should investigate.
Oh,
The man said that if we went to the laboratories, Dr. Paradis would give us a demonstration himself.
But Mary, dear, the fourth dimension. I mean to say, it's obviously fraud.
That's what everyone says when a new invention comes out. Now, this might be an opportunity for us to make a lot of money, John.
Mary, I do wish
to please me, dear.
Well, I can't argue with you very long, Mary. All right. I'll take you to the laboratory in the morning, but I warn you, I'll show this Dr. Paradis up for the charlatan that he is.
Dr. Paradis will be with you both in a moment.
Thank you, my man.
She's just concluding an experiment.
She?
Dr. Paradis is a woman, then?
Oh, yes, madam, and a very brilliant one, too.
Excuse me. Oh, it's the last straw. The whole thing sounded like an obvious fraud, and now we get here and find that a woman doctor's at the back of it all.
Just because she's a woman, it doesn't mean to say that...
How do you do? I'm Dr. Paradis.
Oh, how do you do, madam? I'm Dr. Watson, and this is my wife, Mrs. Watson.
Oh, yes. Come into the laboratory, won't you?
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Paradis.
Well, we're just wasting your time. We're not really interested in this at all, you know.
John, don't mutter.
Barber told me that he had called on you, Mrs. Watson, and that you were very interested in my invention.
Oh, yes, I am. That's why I persuaded my husband to come down with me and see a demonstration.
I'll be most happy to show you everything I can. Here's a practical example of the application of my work. This chamber you see in front of you is made completely of my new alloy.
Oh, what's the thing do? It's just a great metal box with a lot of dials and switches and things. Why is it so big? Do people get inside it?
They can.
What?
Though if they do, they're liable to find themselves transported many miles from here. Come inside, won't you?
Oh, what a lot of nonsense.
Now, John.
Before I give you a demonstration, I want you both to see that there is no exit from inside this chamber. No trapdoors or anything. The only exit is the door we just came through.
Yes, it's just like an airtight metal room.
Stuffy in here, isn't it?
Now let's go outside again. I'll show you how the machine operates. Albert!
Yes, Dr. Paradis.
I'm going to demonstrate the Paradol chamber to Dr. and Mrs. Watson.
Very well. The usual time?
Yes, please, Albert. Now, my assistant goes inside the chamber. I close this metal door on him, so...
What are you going to do with him?
Within a matter of seconds, he will be 7 miles from here.
Really, madam, you
please,
can't
Dr.
expect
Watson,
us to believe...
You're a scientific man. At least give me the opportunity of demonstrating my work.
I'm sorry.
Now, I adjust these dials, turn on the electrical generator, and...
Good Lord, what an amazing business.
Now, open the door, Dr. Watson, and look inside, please.
Great Scott, he's gone. I don't believe it. Dr. Paradis, will you explain this to me?
Gladly. My metal Paradol is an unnatural alloy.
What?
It causes a dislocation in the warp of space and enables us to enter the fourth dimension. You see, time is a dimension. Any object in the past, present, or future can be described precisely in 3 dimensions of space and 1 of time.
Yes, but this machine of yours...
The alloy of Paradol, combined with the great forces of electricity, has created a new force. This element is controlled by these dials, and it is possible to move in 4 dimensions at once. Thus, bodies or other objects can be transported great distances away, all in the twinkling of an eye. I coined the word to describe the process. Teleportation, I call it.
Teleportation? Well, I'm completely confused. All my scientific training tells me this is impossible, and yet... I wonder if you'd give us another demonstration.
Certainly. Perhaps you yourself would like to be teleported somewhere.
Certainly not. Gracious, we know.
I think John would be very unhappy in the fourth dimension. He wouldn't belong.
Yes, you said that any objects could be moved. How about that brown paper parcel on the table over there?
Certainly. It only contains some company circulars. I suggest you write your initials on it so that you can identify it later.
Oh, very well. J.H.W. There you are.
Where do you want it dispatched to?
Send it to my house. I'll give you the address.
That won't be necessary.
Mary, this is an amazing business.
Isn't it, John? Exciting, too.
There we are. Now I adjust the dials once more and... Parcel is already at your house.
Oh,
Doctor.
It's impossible. Come on, Mary. Let's get a cab and race back there as fast as we can.
Well, yes,
goodbye,
dear.
Doctor.
Goodbye, Doctor.
Goodbye.
Now, dear. John, you must admit you're just as excited as I am.
Well, I confess that I'm enormously intrigued. Let me just get my latch front door key up. Here we are. Dr. Paradis is a devilishly clever woman. Even so, my intelligence tells me it's impossible for the package to have reached here before us. Ah, here we are.
Ah, there you are, Master. Mum, just in time for lunch.
Tell me, Annie, did the package arrive for us?
Oh, yes, it did, Mum. I put it on the old table.
Great Scott. How was it delivered, Annie?
Well, now, that's the funny thing about it, sir. I don't know. I went out to polish the brass on the door knocker a few minutes ago, and there was the parson, lying on the doorstep. No one had rung the bell or anything. I didn't know how it got there.
Thank you, Annie. You can go now.
Yes, Mum.
Well, John, what do you say now?
There's a miracle's been performed. I don't believe my eyes. Look, there are my initials on the package. Mary, I think that if you don't mind, after lunch I'll...
You'll go around to Baker Street and tell Sherlock Holmes about this.
Oh, do you mind, dear?
Of course not, dear.
Good. It'll be nice to see Holmes again anyway.
Dr. Watson, how nice to see you again.
Hello, Mrs. Hudson. How are you, my dear?
Oh, I'm just fine. Oh, you're looking grand, sir. Marriage agrees with you, if you don't mind my saying so.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Hudson. Is Mr. Holmes in?
Aye, sir. And I'm very glad you're seeing him. He's no been acting like himself lately.
Oh, really?
Locking his door, and only unlocking it for me when I give him a password. And he's hardly touched his food for the last 3 days. To tell you the truth, Dr. Watson, I'm awful worried about him.
Really? Well, I'll go up to him.
He'll be glad to see you, I'm sure.
Yes? Who is it?
It's me, Watson.
Watson? Oh, possibly. I'm not taking any chances.
Holmes, this is ridiculous. Surely you know my voice after all these years.
John H. Watson. Tell me what your middle initial stands for, and I'll let you in.
It stands for Hamish.
Watson, my dear fellow. How are you?
I'm fine and delighted to see you again, Holmes. Incidentally, why all this rigmarole about locked doors and passwords?
Well, Professor Moriarty has decided that it's high time to settle his score with me. There have been several attempts on my life lately. Twice I've been attacked in the streets, and only yesterday a shot was fired at me through the window you see broken there.
Lord Holmes, you must be careful.
I am being very careful. That's why I indulged in what you refer to as all this rigmarole. But, well, enough of my problems. What's on your mind? There's a sparkle in your eye and an air of excitement that tells me that you've some news to impart.
Well, I must say there is something.
Of course there is, my dear fellow. Come on, tell me about it.
You ever heard of a new metal called Paradol and its inventor, Dr. Paradis?
Oh, yes, yes, indeed I have. I received a prospectus concerning it the other day.
Well, what do you think of the idea?
Oh, obviously, it's rubbish designed to fool a gullible public into buying shares. Don't tell me that you were taking advice.
Oh, no, of course not, Holmes. Naturally, as a scientific man, I knew it was rubbish. My wife, however, had got a little involved in the concern, and so today, to prove to her that the whole thing was a fraud, we went down to the laboratory and met this Dr. Paradis.
Oh, did you indeed?
In the first place, let me tell you, this Dr. Paradis is a woman.
Oh, a woman?
As you can imagine, I didn't have any difficulty in discrediting her theories. In fact, I'm afraid I made her seem rather stupid. However, we did stay there long enough for her to give us a demonstration. And that's the way that it was, Holmes. When we got back to our house, the initial package was there, waiting for us.
Oh, childish trick. Obviously, the Paradol chamber contains an ingeniously hidden trap door through which the assistant disappeared and later the package. A fast cab then took it to your home before you could get there.
Oh, yes, oh, really? Well, yes, of course, that's exactly how I explained the thing to Mary.
Was she impressed with the feat?
Yes, she was. But you know how women are. I tried to tell her the whole thing was a fraud. She's very obstinate. I was hoping perhaps that you will help me expose the concern.
Oh, it hardly seemed necessary, old fellow. Such an obvious fraud. However, for your sake, I'll be glad to do anything I can.
Well, I thought we might go down to the laboratory late tonight when nobody's there and take a look at that Paradol chamber a little more closely.
Yes, a rather good idea. After being cooped up here for 3 days, it'll be a pleasure to get some night air and indulge in a little simple burglarizing.
Well, shall I call for you here?
No, wait a minute, dear fellow. It's much too dangerous. I'll be in a hansom cab outside your house about 11:30 tonight. How's that?
Splendid. Quite like old times, isn't it, Holmes?
Yes, it is, old chap, though I think that this time, for Mrs. Watson's sake, I must try and keep you out of trouble.
Midnight, Holmes?
Yes, Watson. Time that only confirmed old bachelors like myself should be wandering the streets of London.
Oh, rubbish, Holmes. You talk as if Mary was a tyrant.
Now, don't get angry with me, old chap. I was only being facetious. Is this Dr. Paradis' laboratory?
Yes. I'd like to be seen. I don't imagine it'll be very hard to break in, though.
Strike a match, will you? I took the precaution of bringing this lantern.
There you are.
Thanks, old fellow.
Is the door locked?
Yes, but I think the skeleton key will do the trick. Hold this lantern for a second, will you?
Yeah.
Oh, this is child's play so far. Come on.
Yes. There's the Paradol chamber over there.
Uh-huh. Give me the lantern again, old chap, will you? Thanks. Mm-hmm. Quite an elaborate contraption.
The door's been left open. Let's go in and take a look at the inside of it.
Ah, not both of us, Watson. If this is the only entrance and the two of us walked in, it'd be too easy to slam the door shut on us.
I suppose so. You go in and I'll keep watch out here.
All right. Oh, I trust that in a few minutes I won't find myself lying on your doorstep.
Holmes, there are times when your sense of humor is a little strained. Holmes! Holmes, you all right? Watson! What is it, Holmes?
The body of a dead woman. She's been shot. Unless I'm much mistaken.
Let me come and look. 1,000 to 1, it's Dr. Paradis. Yes, yes, it is.
Watson, get out of here. Don't you see the...
Good Lord, someone has slammed the door shut on us.
Yes, my dear fellow. We walked into a trap very neatly. I'm afraid that we're imprisoned in what appears to be an airtight metal chamber, and the only person who can help us to get out of it again is a corpse.
We now return to Act Two of Timely Audio's presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Now back to tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure. It is in the early hours of a winter's morning in 1887. The famous pair, while investigating the mysteries of a scientific laboratory in the East End of London, have been trapped in an airtight metal cabinet, their only companion being the dead body of a woman scientist. As we rejoin our story, Sherlock Holmes and his old friend Dr. Watson are listening intently as footsteps approach what appears to be their metal coffin.
There's someone outside. They're sliding back the metal panel.
Good evening, gentlemen.
That voice, it's Dr. Paradis' assistant. Let us out of here.
Or should I be more precise, Mr. Holmes, and say good morning?
Hello, Moriarty.
Moriarty, you scoundrel. I can just get my hands on him.
Dr. Watson, I wish you could get over your dislike for me. For my own part, I'm genuinely sorry that my trap had to catch you, too. I've often felt unhappy that you're not on my side. Such slavish admiration if you've given your friend Sherlock Holmes must be highly gratified.
Never mind about all that. What do you think you're up to?
It's obvious, my dear Watson. The whole scheme was a plan to lure me out of my safe hiding by presenting an intriguing problem, and one that victimized the wife of my old friend. You knew it would get back to my ears, didn't you, Moriarty?
Yes, exactly.
But why did you murder this Paradis woman?
That's equally obvious, my dear Watson. It served her purpose in presenting a most convincing scientific front. As soon as the trap was baited, she was a liability. She might tell tales, and so she was killed. Like so many other of your accomplices, my dear Professor.
Precisely. Now, my dear fellows, I'm afraid that I must close this panel and say goodbye. Quite sorry to have to kill you, but you're becoming dreadfully in my way.
And how do you plan to kill us, Moriarty?
By doing nothing more than closing this panel. Oh, I could be frightfully dramatic and release deadly gases into the chamber, or poisonous snakes, or something equally colorful. But quite frankly, it seems so much simpler just to shut you in. Your oxygen supply won't last very long, you know. And for your benefit, Dr. Watson, I may tell you that Paradol, whatever its other shortcomings as a metal, is bulletproof. Goodbye, you meddling fool!
Oh.
There seems nothing for us to do but look around and ascertain our chances of escape.
Holmes, I don't like this. We're in a very nasty situation.
My dear Watson, sometimes you're a master of understatement. Aha, just as I thought.
What have you found, Holmes?
Sliding panel, just behind the dead woman. It leads us to a passageway. A passageway that has been bricked up only within the last few hours. But long enough, I'm afraid, to make it impossible. No, there's no escape here. Hold the lantern a little higher, will you, Walter?
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, what are we going to do now?
I was just estimating the cubic capacity of this chamber. The air supply should last comfortably for at least another 8 hours. I recommend a brief sleep to refresh us and also to conserve our oxygen supply.
Sleep? Who could sleep at a time like this?
I can and you can, old chap, if you discipline yourself.
Well, I'll try, Holmes, but I know perfectly well I shan't close my eyes.
Wake up, Watson, wake up.
Yes, Mary dear. Oh, it's you. Oh, we're still in this infernal trap.
I'm afraid so, old chap.
What time is
it? Just after 7 a.m.
How long did you estimate our oxygen supply would last?
Probably about another hour.
Well, it's just possible that some worker will come to the laboratory early and let us out.
I shouldn't count too much on that if I were you.
I suppose not. I say, Holmes, I'm famished.
Yes, I thought you would be, my dear chap. So I saved you this half of a bar of chocolate. I ate my own share just before you awakened.
Oh, thanks, my dear fellow. Did you sleep too, Holmes?
No, I didn't, Watson. I employed my time in conducting a minute examination of this chamber. I was trying to find some possible way of getting out.
And you failed, eh?
I'm afraid so.
Holmes, this looks like the end, doesn't it? Well, if it is my time to die, I'm glad that we're together again. Although I blame myself entirely for letting you into the trap.
Come now, my dear fellow. Don't take it as badly as that.
But you admitted you're defeated and that there's no possible way out to this distance.
I meant that there's no way out from the inside. So my plan worked.
Good gracious me. What on earth?
Lestrade, there you are.
Mary, you dear little thing. You must have been frightened to death.
Hello, Donald. Poor dear, you must have spent a miserable night.
Well. Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson have been getting themselves in trouble again, eh?
Lestrade, this is no time for your heavy-handed badinage. There's the body of a murdered woman inside that chamber. She was killed by Professor Moriarty.
Professor Moriarty?
It's too bad you didn't get my message sooner.
Your message?
Oh, bless myself, Holmes. I wish you'd tell me how you got your message to the Scotland Yard.
Well, ever since these recent attacks on my life, I've had my delightful band of ragamuffins, the Baker Street Irregulars, watching my house in fixed watches, two at a time. I gave the boys instructions to follow me whenever I went out. And if ever I did not reappear within 3 hours, they were to report to our friend Lestrade at Scotland Yard.
Holmes, you're amazing. You think of everything.
Just a minute, gentlemen. Just a minute. I didn't get no message from any of your Baker Street Irregulars.
Oh, you didn't?
No, sir. Though I did find a couple of the boys tied up when we came in here just
but
now.
If you didn't get a message from them, how did you come here so opportunely?
That's an easy one, because Mrs. Watson here came and fetched me.
You did, Mary, but how on earth?
Go on, Mom. Huh? Tell them.
Well, it's really very simple. When John came back from seeing you yesterday, Mr. Holmes, he was over-elaborately casual in his references to the Peridol Chamber. So, of course, I knew at once the two of you were going to investigate the matter. I also caught him oiling his revolver after dinner. I didn't know that you slipped out last night, John. But as soon as I woke up this morning, I realized what had happened. So I went straight to Scotland Yard for Inspector Lestrade and brought him here with me.
Why, Mary, you clever little thing. Isn't she a clever darling, Holmes?
Mrs. Watson, this has been a salutary experience. Will you allow me to congratulate you on your deductive ability?
Well, that's very nice of you, Mr. Holmes, but I really don't deserve any compliments, if you don't mind my saying so. It was elementary, my dear Mr. Holmes. Elementary.
This is Bob Campbell saying good night for the Petrie family. This program comes to you from our Hollywood studios.
You've been listening to the timely audio presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. Copyright 2020 by Timely Audio. All rights reserved.